This is the beginning of Class 6.
Talking about doing the preparations and having to do all the preparatory practices first, you know, you had said before, well, you can't just go into a room all of a sudden and start meditating, you know. So, in practical reality, you know, know, and you'd also said, well, 6 months for a shamatha or whatever.
So if you're doing it
in practical reality, you know, and you'd also said, well, 6 months for a shamatha or whatever.
So if you're doing it.
If you're doing a regular practice. So in reality, in practical reality, how long are we talking about? Like, you got to do all your preliminaries and do a daily strong meditation before you do a significant retreat of, like, all day for months. How long should you...
I think an hour is enough, but I didn't want to...
No, but I mean, like, years of
if
that?
If you do it an hour, it a lot depends on your tokhtaktiv jump. You know, your karmic... Mm. situation at that time. If you're very good at your morality, confessing, cleaning yourself all the time, we're doing bad deeds every day. If you're really seriously trying to improve those every day, then I'd say in a year you could have some nice, you know, even 6 months, I think you would develop some deep concentration. And I think even sooner, like 3 months, you would start to notice a change in your ability to concentrate.
If you're doing the confessions and everything every day.
Yeah, and I can't emphasize enough, if you don't do those and you don't find yourself advancing, well, that's the reason, you know. And you will advance if you do those. And it's just a fact of life, you know. Just try it, you know, do it like that.
What about if you confess, like, during the day? I mean, you realize you did something.
Atishar carried a stupa around with him. I mean, it wasn't easy with something that big, you know. And when a stupa is like a little, you know, do it like that.
What about if you confess, like, during the day? I mean, you realize you did something.
Atishar carried a stupa around with him. I mean, it wasn't easy with something that big, you know. And when a stupa is like a little reliquary where you hold some lamas, and he would ride from Lhasa to Shigatse on a horse, and when he had a bad thought, he would get off the horse and do a confession on the spot. And his, you know, disciples would be standing there, you know. And so that's not, yeah, that's fine.
I mean, you do have to really, like, I mean, when you say confession, you don't mean the Catholic sense. You think about it, what you did or what you thought.
Those
not
four
very
things
good.
We talked about. Yeah. The main thing is to get some kind of, it's called domsem. Domsem means the wish to restrain yourself in the future. That's really the main function of it. So it doesn't mean you can just do whatever you want, purify it, and then go do it again. You have to have some kind of desire to restrain yourself and have some logical, workable program for improving yourself. You know, don't just wish you could be a better person. You're logical about how you feed yourself 3 times a day. You're logical about how you find an apartment. You're logical at work. You know, be logical about your... You know, just make a program that's going to work for you. You know, and go at it like any other activity you go at. Say, I'd like to do less of what I do wrong 6 months from now. How can I do that? And make yourself a plan and follow through with it and do it. You know.
In addition to that hour a day of concentration for 6 months or whatever, mm-hmm. In addition to that, there are the preliminaries also. Right?
I'm counting the preliminaries in the hour, because as you do them, as you get used to doing them, they take less time, actually. So, I think you can... I'm talking about the preliminaries just before meditation practice. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the... Those have to be done too before you can do the retreat, right?
I can't show you that right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're only talking about when you go for a tantric retreat. And, you know, when you're...
So for shamatha, I'm only talking about... So to be successful in shamatha,
no,
it's not
necessary
to do mudra practice?
You don't have to, no. We don't have a custom of doing those specifically, but we do have... It's optional. You can do them, or you can do some other virtuous deeds. Yeah. You
know,
okay. Like, there's a practice in some traditions and lineages to do 100,000 of this, 100,000 of this, you know, 10,000 prostrations, and then you're ready to do some practice, other practice. But there is that custom that does exist, but there are other ways to fulfill that in our tradition, in our lineage.
Could you say something about doing practice, doing slash mantras when you're not at home? you know, the portable altar, I think.
I can't say much about mantras. Those are tantric, you know. If you've committed to do some, then you have to do them. And they're very powerful. Why they work, what they mean. They, you know, when the time comes, we can study it.
So doing it on the subway is better than not doing it at all, even though you might feel more comfortable doing it, you know.
I don't know.
Well, let's just say confession, for instance. That's something that we talk about. That's not a tantric.
I think it's a bad habit to even consider it, you know. That's like when you go to your boss and you say, should I take my vacation, should I take an extra week on my vacation now or take an extra week 6 weeks from now? And if he's smart, he'll say, well, I don't think you should take an extra week at all.
You know, I'll come back to...
Yeah, what I mean is don't get in the habit of thinking that you have any option.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't do it. You feed yourself very well 3 times a day. It's a miracle. It's a lot of work. You know, if you think about it, all the effort that goes into getting 3 times a day food, how many times do you miss it? You know, very rarely, if you're like me. Put the same effort into your meditation. Just that time is for meditation, period. I mean, it should be extremely rare cases where, like, we were driving the kids up to the retreat. We had to get up at 6 to get there. You have to do it before when you get there. But otherwise, just don't even consider it. You know, human nature, if you give yourself an option, you'll take it. You know?
Michael, are we mixing something up here? I don't think anyone's talking about meditating on the subway or meditating while they're walking to work.
Well, you mentioned confession, right? I
right.
As a preliminary to meditation, no. If you can, if you have committed yourself to do confession every day, you know, do it well in your home. Take the time. Find the time. You know, give up something else. If you have to, give up part of your job. Take a lower job. Or control your job. You know, don't let your job run you. And if it does, then maybe you have to find another one. It's hard. It's not easy. Easy to say, but it's hard to leave it and go to another one. Okay. We are on the fourth problem. We finished preparation for meditation. We finished the environment for meditation. We finished the physical posture for meditation. And then we're on the mental technique. And we had how many problems would come up?
Three.
Oh, so far we've had three.
One.
There will be 5 total. Okay. And there'll be 8 antidotes to this. So we're now on to number 4. And that's Dumichepa. By the way, I didn't have it, but there's a chart. I don't know if some of you have seen it. An elephant and a monkey. It's a path up to these through these mental stages, and it's a picture. It's a woodblock carving, an old one. It's very good. If we can, I'll try to find it somewhere.
I have it if you want me to.
You have one of those?
I got it from Nongo Monster.
Oh, fine. Maybe we can get it reproduced. If you can loan it to me, I'll get Marie to...
Okay.
It's very nice, you know, you have the whole chart, and the monkey is, I think the monkey is Gopa, you know, agitation, and like that. The elephant is just the money, eventual, and he changes colors from black to white as he goes up. Okay, Dumichepa. Dumichepa means not taking action. Not taking action. This is the fourth problem that can come up in your mind. What were the first three that you asked?
Laziness.
Yeah, which is, I don't know if I like the word laziness. Not wanting to do it, really. And that's our most insurmountable obstacle. You know, if you don't have shamatha now, and if you've been studying Dharma for a couple of years, the fact is you don't really want to do it. You know? To be honest, because if you really wanted to, you would have had it by now. You know, that's just a fact. You know, we're not trying very hard. So that's I don't know if laziness is so good. I think it's like not really wanting it, not really wanting to do it. That's the first one. What's the second one?
Losing
the object, which is called forgetting the instruction, right? So that's kind of a misnomer. And the third one was what?
Dullness and agitation.
Yeah, those two extremes.
Agitation.
Dullness and agitation. Whatever translation you want to use, I don't mind. I don't feel strongly about any of them. If you know what it is, that's... Yeah.
It's usually
an
example for non-identification of either of
No, I haven't seen that.
The antidote is their identification.
You could say that. We'll get into that tonight. But that's not what the Tibetan says. It just says Chingun Yi, the two.
And that foot on being using it, that foot point of the other meditation, that's familiar with, make that point.
It's a good point, and we'll talk about it tonight. But the Tibetan doesn't say it. It's implied, and we'll talk about that. Okay. So Dhimmi Chepa means not taking action. And this applies to her note. It means, what was the last problem we had? It was agitation and dullness. And what was the antidote?
Watchfulness.
Watchfulness. So that doesn't imply anything about doing anything about it yet. So watchfulness catches it. Okay. Chingun Yi occur. Watchfulness catches it. But then it's a fault if you
don't
do anything. Okay. All right. So in number three, your mind either got distracted to an object of what? Normally a pleasant object. Which doesn't mean, you know, you're thinking of some sexy girl or something like that. It means most of the thoughts you have during the day are what I'm going to do next, what I should do right now, you know, where am I going to go tonight? Those are all desire thoughts, really. When you boil it down, the thoughts of what you're going to do next is pretty much a desire thought, because it's motivated by what will make me feel good next. Almost all your thoughts are. So that's gopa, that's agitation, if you want to call it that. And then what was chingwa, the other one? Dullness, which was the what? It's where the object gets very dark. You're still fixed on it, but it's very dark, or else you've lost clarity completely with that. Okay. So, awareness or mindfulness, what do we call it? Watchfulness? Catches it. That's the antidote for number three. Now in number four, it's the decision to do something about it. What that implies is that you can have those two mental states occur, and you notice them, and what? You don't do anything. And it takes some effort to do something. And that's a problem in meditation. If you try for a while, you'll notice yourself doing that. You catch yourself starting to get buzzed out, and you notice it, and then you don't do anything. You don't think to do anything. And that's the fourth problem of meditation. It's not taking any action. Its antidote is, guess what? Yeah, what's me mean?
Not,
right? So what do you guys?
Do chapa.
We're on to H, I think, right?
G.
G.
G?
No,
E. Let's see, the first one had four, right?
F.
One had H.
G now.
Four had E. Three had F.
So what's that?
Four has G, right? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Dhyanchenpa means doing something. What you do about agitation and what you do about dullness, are they the same thing? Would you do the same thing for both?
No.
Obviously not. So first we're going to talk about the nastiest one, which is the worst of those two?
Dullness.
Why?
It's hard to tell.
No, there was a better reason.
Because you think it's your friend.
Because it looks like a family member, but it's a traitor. In other words, it can be mistaken for meditation. You can easily mistake it for a successful meditation. Because you can sit there for a long time doing it, and many, many people do for many years, and they don't realize that they're not meditating.
Isn't that a fault more of like advanced practitioners or people who are really good meditators?
I think it's the fault of someone who can sit for more than half an hour or an hour. But what they don't realize is that they're just in a sort of a stupid state, a dull state. Yeah. I do it a lot. I've done it a lot, and it's very subtle. It's very dangerous. So that's why they work on that more. They teach you more about that one because it's so dangerous. It's so attractive. It looks so much like real meditation. And you can sit there for a long time. You know, and your breath is real nice, and it's quiet, and you might be getting some good sensations in your body, but your mind is just blank or dull. Not blank, but it's dark.
I mean, even if I could say something, that's even a more pleasant state than our normal, discursive thoughts, random thoughts. Relative to how we normally are thinking and frantic, you know, that seems like.
It is. I think it's sort of like if you've ever been stoned on marijuana or a little bit drunk, or it's kind of like that. I think it's kind of like a dull, stupid state. So that's the most dangerous one. And the antidotes are, so don't forget, we're talking about half of it now, half of the problem, which is two more. And that's, antidote of that is, Jimba, I can't think of one English word, but it means tightening up your concentration. Tightening up your concentration.
Michael, is it the same as chinglet trauma?
We're talking about two different things now, and I'll answer that. I'll quote. Okay, he says, and I like this. I think this might help you. Chinglet trauma is semshunde yin xing qing shen yi kang che jian jiu qi de zela, which means qinglan chamo. This is dullness, this is plain dullness, right? Qinglan chamo, which I didn't write up here, qinglan chamo is that subtle dullness. In plain dullness, you've lost something, but you haven't lost something else. What is that?
You've lost intensity.
No clarity. In plain dullness, you're fixed on the object, but it's totally, it's not clear in your mind at all. And in the subtle form, it's more dangerous because you have what? You still have fixation. You do have clarity. But there's no strength to it. There's no intensity to it. Okay? There's no power to it. This is plain qinghua is where you lose the clarity completely. Qinghua tamo, okay, which is its brother, okay? Actually, it's chamo, okay? Qinghua chamo is the subtle form of dullness. And that's the dangerous one. That's where you are fixed on the object. It is still apparent to your mind. You have some clarity, but the clarity is very feeble and the clarity has no power or strength to it. And you're satisfied with that and you stay there for a long time. And it just leads you into a state of gross dullness. Eventually, it flips you back into losing the clarity.
Same antidote for the subtle dullness? Different.
We're going to talk about it.
Is shishin then the antidote for both of those?
Yeah. It's not really the antidote, and as that's the point that Ariel made. It's more the thing that yells, "Hey!"
It's the alarm.
Yeah, it's the watch. They call it sopa in Tibet. Sopa means it's a guard, it's watchman, the person who is that?
Gatekeeper.
In India, they have this guy. They still have a guy who walks around all night long, and he has a staff, and he bangs it on the ground. You know, all the people in the neighborhood hire this guy. He walks around all night, and he bangs this stick on the ground, and you hear him, and it's so you know he's doing his job, you know, thieves run away, you know, they hear him coming and they run away, they keep the thieves out of the rich neighborhoods in New Delhi, you know. So that's his job is only to yell. Okay, and Ariel's right in that sense. He's not stopping. It's not the antidote for those states of mind, it's being aware that they've come up. And then you do the next, then you have to watch out for the next problem, which is not doing anything about it. So she asked me to write the Tibetan for the subtle form, right? Just this part. So the antidote to answer Tim's question, the antidote for both of them coming up is the same, which is to yell. But the antidote which stops them once they've come up is different. And that's what we're talking about now. We're talking about what do you do when you get dullness you dimma. You tighten up on the object.
That's a specific definition of dujepa.
It's half of dujepa. It's the action you take when you get dull, but we didn't get yet to the action you take when you get agitated.
Okay.
So this is a general word for taking action. When you get dull, you're going to take one series of actions. When you get, and I haven't written it yet, when you get agitation, which means your mind goes to a desirable object, you're going to take a different action. So we're only talking about the action you take when you start to get dull.
Which is the?
Dimba.
Have we discussed the action for the subtle?
Maybe it'd be better if I did this.
No, that wouldn't be better.
This is 4A, really, okay? This is one half of taking action. I'm sorry, this is 4A. What action do you take? Well, it depends on which of the two problems you noticed in the last step. If you noticed yourself, and in the text he says, he doesn't say being dull, he says catch yourself as you slide into dullness. It's the sheshin, the watchfulness, is supposed to trigger at the verge of sliding into dullness. Okay? But as you get dullness, or after you've had it for half hour, you dimba. Okay? You dimba. You tighten up on the object. Now, how do you do that? He's got a whole series of advice here. It's good.
Is dimba, is that the correction?
For this problem.
Okay.
And it's half of this, which is taking action.
Okay.
The problem is not doing anything when you notice those things coming up.
Okay.
The correction is to start concentrating better on the object. Yeah.
Why isn't that G, G's or something instead of 4A?
It should be G1.
I'm sorry, it should be G1. He's right. That's a good...
So that's what confused me.
Chingwa, do me jepa, do jepa, drimpa. That's the
say again.
Right? That's the order. First you get chingwa.
Yeah, let's suppose you've got chingwa. Uh-huh. Then you do Sheshin. Which is, hey, I got dullness. You notice it. Then you do
dujepa.
Dujepa in the form of dimba.
Right.
Right.
Okay. You notice yourself getting dull. The notice is the sheshin. He yells, hey, you're sliding into dullness. That was already last week. Now, what do? You concentrate. You tighten up your concentration.
So G also, it comes after 3 also then, because when the guard sounds the alarm, then you have to...
Well, then the guys run out of their houses and beat up the thief. That's dujepa. Dujepa is the guys coming out to take action.
to take
the soldiers waking up after the... What do you call it in the army?
Sentry.
The sentry yell.
So how do you tighten up your concentration?
We're just about to talk about it. But I want to make sure everybody's got still with me, okay? Still okay? Anyone confused? No?
Well, we're not talking about subtle yet, right?
We're going to talk about subtle. Yes. We're talking about both, actually. Yeah.
In monasteries, do the monks get to chat with like a mentor or an older monk, or they're just presented with this text and they have to follow?
No, when you enter the monastery, an older, you have two kinds of teachers. You have three kinds of teachers. I mean, one is your house teacher, and he's like your parent. You know, and he can be a great scholar, or he can just be a cook at the monastery, but he becomes your father. And he teaches you reading and writing and manners, monkly manners. He tells you what to memorize. And he feeds you at his expense. The monastery doesn't help. And then later on you meet your scripture teacher. And he becomes your main scripture teacher. And then he may or may not be your house teacher. Usually not. And then he takes you through the scriptures. And then you've got like adjunct professors who, like, they'll be a specialist in Abhidhamma. Let's say your scripture teacher is not a specialist in Abhidhamma, then he'll say, okay, for Abhidhamma, I want you to go to this other teacher and study with him. So if you had a question about this, you'd normally go to your scripture teacher. and ask him. And it's a very close relationship. It's very, very nice. And it's a lifetime relationship. You never... it's permanent. You never
have to get along.
Yeah.
So, Michael, either of those teachers or neither of those teachers become their root teacher?
Well, I'd say oftentimes it's your house teacher, in a way. But oftentimes it's your scripture teacher. But it may not be either one, really.
I mean, most of the time...
I'd say most often it's your... If you ask them, I'd say it'd be 50-50 split between your house teacher and your... The house teacher might be in charge of 30 young men, so he might feel closer to your scripture teacher in that case. If you're in a small house, college, what I'm saying house is the college, there's 12 colleges in our monastery. Some of the colleges are very small. Your house teacher might be only have two students, and then I think you sort of get to feel more closely to him. I think it just depends on who it is that when they speak, it's a chin-up for you. It's that 7-6 preliminary we talked about. When he teaches you something, it strikes you and changes you. And the person who has that ability to strike that chord in you, I think, becomes your root lama. Okay. So Jimba. Jimba means to tighten up your concentration. Now, the first question that Namara Kyabjepa Boka Rinpoche says, do you have to stop meditating? Do you have to give up the object to fix your chinwa? He says, no. And that's the first level of Jimba. So the first meaning of Jimba, which could be on your homework, is to just not give up the object and just try to tighten your concentration on it.
Just when you were talking about the methods?
Yeah, now I'm going to tell you all the kinds of Jimba. The best one to do, if you can do it, don't give up meditating on the object. Keep it in mind. And just try to increase the clarity of it. Try to bring back the clarity of it. The intensity of the clarity. Yeah.
So do not give up meditation then?
When the intensity is the subtleness, though. The clarity is the growth.
Yeah, if it's really gross chinwa, you've lost all the clarity.
So when you tighten up for gross chinwa, you're trying to bring back
clarity. Yeah, you're just getting back to plain clarity.
So do not give up meditation.
So the first kind of Jimba, the first kind of tightening your concentration, is just to try to bring back your concentration on the object until you have some good clarity. What's the distinction between this and the next level of Jimba? You haven't given up on keeping the object in front of you. Which implies what about the next kind of Jimba? Yeah, okay? The second kind of Jimba is where, okay, it's gone too far. You can't keep the object in mind, and when you try to increase the clarity, you're not successful.
Is that subtle?
It gets to be subtle, and he says that. But if you try to increase, and it's not happening, he actually says it's flipping towards growth, chinwa. Mm. That means the chinwa's got so serious that you're going to have to give up the object for a few minutes.
Okay, the first one is don't give up the object and try to concentrate on the clarity of the object.
Yeah, try to get it more clear to your mind. Well, and there's a lot of, no, it's to shift to another object. Okay. So and he says something nice, which I want to translate for you.
So the second one, shift to another object?
Shift to another object.
Sometimes they just go away from it for a while and then you can come back to it because they don't necessarily specify shifting and changing the object.
That sounds like changing to me.
No, coming back, I mean using the same object as meditation, but taking a break.
And putting your mind where?
Just not meditating.
Well, we'll talk about it. This is what it says here.
Like break the session.
We'll talk about it. Okay. He says, Chingwa Tomani Sem Shumbei Yin. He says, the cause of subtle dullness is some kind of shumba. Shumba is a very interesting word. It means almost like a kind of depression.
Could you write that down?
Yeah. I don't want to write too many things on the board. But since you asked, you know, you don't have to write this, okay? People ask me, what do you do for depression in Tibet? I mean, this is one kind. Shumba means where you just kind of lost your confidence, or you're not or you have some kind of slightly depression in your mind. Mm-hmm. And he says this and dullness are related. Therefore, he says, yeah.
That sentence, the cause of what is depression?
He says, Shumba contributes to Chinwa. Okay. Shumba meaning some kind of, what did I say? Depression? Loss of confidence, really. And he says, that really contributes to dullness. You don't have to know that. I didn't want to write it down. Okay? And he says, what should you do then? You have to do something to restore your I don't know what you call it in English. It's a real hard word in Tibetan. It's called sangtapa. And sangtapa means to uplift yourself. We call it uplift. Okay? It means to think about something that's going to bring your mind back up. Okay. He says, so the second kind of jimba is move your mind to something else which is going to uplift your mind. Yeah.
So does that mean something that you have an easier time with?
No, he's got several specific thoughts which will sangtapa you, which will uplift you. Okay. That comes later.
Encouraged.
Yeah, like that. Sangtapa is a... Well, you'll see some examples, okay? I'll give you his example.
Mm-hmm. Number two, we just want us to concentrate on the clarity without the intensity.
Well, this problem, Chinwa, which is dullness, is some kind of disease of your clarity. Yeah. So this whole problem
of
Chinwa...
Number two, we're only concentrating on the clarity, we're not concentrating on the intensity of number two.
Which number two do you mean? Oh, it's where you're really given up on meditating on that object now. He's saying that your mind is so far down.
No, the one before shifts to another object. Before that one.
Tighten concentration.
That was just trying...
No, tighten concentration. And then number two was keep object in mind and concentrate on clarity.
No, that was just number one. That wasn't the number two. So what do you do to uplift your mind? Okay, you've gotten Chinwa. The alarm sounded. Sheshin. Okay? Then you tried to take action. Do Chinwa. The action you took because you were dull and not because you were agitated is Chinwa. You tried to tighten your concentration. But it didn't work. Maybe it got worse. So what you do then is take your mind off that object of meditation and move it to another object of meditation, which is one of the following objects of meditation. He says the best one is, and that could be on your homework, just thinking how fortunate you are. To have reached this kind of a birth and your present dharma circumstances. Okay. And that's the most powerful one.
So then you're no longer doing single point concentration?
You are, but you've changed the point.
So you're not really doing any analytical
thinking. You've lost your original point of concentration.
You tried to go to another object.
This is where you've tried to tighten up on the object, you tried to make it clear, and it failed.
Then you went to another object.
Now you change, you get rid of that object, and you go to this object, in order to bring your mind back up.
D2, right?
So then it will be part of what you're
it's
saying.
It's a part of Jimba, really. It's a kind of tightening of the mind by trying to uplift the mind. All kinds of tightening.
It is the same topic.
Yeah. Yeah, same topic.
This is also
Jimba. So when you move your
this
mind...
This is a kind of Jimba, yeah. It's under the category of Jimba, which means tightening it up.
Like G2?
No, it's not. She asked that. That's the question she asked. I told you I would give you three or four kinds of Jimba. Three or four ways to tighten up.
But this isn't...
This isn't
like,
the tightening. No.
This isn't like an analytical meditation. This is more just reminding yourself, bringing it to mind. You're still sort of... stable. I mean, you're concentrating.
No, I think it's got to become an analytical meditation at that point. Because you're going to have to count your downjors, 18 of them. And we're not going to get into that. But what it means is, by the way, I'll say something about this. This is a topic which we're going to cover when? What's the last subject of ours?
Objects of meditation.
Yeah, what to meditate about. Actually, by the time you finish this course, you're going to be meditating on the subject, on the categories of the long range. You're going to learn to meditate on the entire structure of your career in the Dharma up to the time you become a tantric deity, okay? I mean, you're gonna get all of the major categories that you have to work on up to that point. And then you're going to meditate on those. That's going to be the object of your meditation. I think, what's his name? Alexander Berzin, who helped me come to meet my Lama, he translated the whole Lama Rinpoche. It wasn't Pabongkas, but it was based on Pabongkas. You know, it was like 4 volumes. He gave it to Harvard for his dissertation. He would meditate on the whole thing the whole morning. Like up till noon, he would go through all, every subject category. You know, it was like 4 volumes, you know, in his mind. And he had it down to where he could go through it. So he knew his roadmap, you know, and that will be our object of meditation. So, when your Jhumpa gets to that point, you have to change to another subject. You should change to the subject of how lucky you are in your Dharma practice. Okay, you're lucky to be alive. Not lucky, but you should be proud and happy. And what he's talking about is a kind of joy. What he's saying is, when it gets so bad that you can't keep your mind on the object anymore, and you've tried to tighten it, but it didn't work, then get some joy about being alive, having teachings, being healthy enough to study, having the opportunity to study, being in a place where the books are, not being handicapped, etc. And he says a beautiful thing here. He says, you and I, Rangleng ar lo ma kombe, did tell the Pimbo Rekawan, on Kawadon. You and I haven't meditated on this much, and we're not used to this thinking. We're not used to thinking this way much, but, and in the first few times you try it, in the first few weeks you try it, you won't get any big light coming on. Okay, so big deal, I'm alive. You won't think, nothing will uplift you, you know. You won't say, okay, it's supposed to thrill me that I'm alive. Then nothing happens. He says, Gombashi yina del den ye kawa tenda nye tso so sambe don la chutang choma tabashin du gaya lor don. But he says, once you have meditated on this subject long enough and you understand the importance that you're alive and that you have Dharma, it'll be just like throwing cold water on your face. He says, it'll have the same effect as taking ice water and throwing it on your face. And you'll get some kind of bliss will come in your heart. And then that chinwa will be defeated. Then what should you do? Go back to your original object, which for a beginner is normally an object, a Buddha or your Lama or some picture. Go back to your original object.
How much time do you spend on this, thinking how fortunate?
We'll talk about it. Well, until the chinwa goes away, right? Until you feel like bright again, and then you put the object back in your mind, yeah.
Yeah,
it is. It is for us.
It's difficult for me to. It seems to me easier to understand the various problems and their correction when you're talking about visualizing an object rather than analytical meditation.
I understand. But it's not true if you think about it.
No, I mean, I understand, but just in terms of what...
It's easier
to determine whether an image is clear than it is whether an idea...
Yeah, well, maybe you're not... Don't forget, he said clarity doesn't refer to how clear the picture is. He said that very strongly. He said it refers to how clear your state of mind is.
Right.
How bright your mind
but
is.
Usually how things are related.
How sharp your mind is. Oh, yeah, they're always... If your mind is dull, the object is dull, but not vice versa.
Because
with
the dullness, with an image, they talk about visualizing something. It's like turn on the light, make it brighter. If you
No, not that you're. No, that is gonna come. And that's something. But when I say your mind get clearer, I don't mean, and a lot of people mistake it for some kind of lightness like that. It's not that. It's invisible. It's like water, and it's just like you're scuba diving in dirty water or you're scuba diving in clean water. You know, if you've ever scuba dived.
Deeper into your mind, you know.
Yeah, I'm talking about the state of your mind, and not the state of... I think a lot of people, when you say clarity, they think brightness in the sense of that light. It's not like that. It's that you're... It's more like clarity
more like
in the sense of...
Sharpness.
No.
Sharpness.
No, it's the...
Alertness.
It's the alertness.
Well, that's sharp.
Of the mind.
Yeah, but I mean, we
yeah, not the details of... You see, of the... Not details. It's the mental... state of bright and bushy-tailed, you know, it's that, not referring to the object. Because of your lack of bright and bushy-tailed, what happens to the object? It gets unclear.
So you mean up? When you say bright and bushy-tailed, you mean sort of up?
I mean alert, and powerfully concentrative.
Like an excited energy level, almost.
I don't mean to that, because that can be close to, you know, losing your concentration, but I mean... As I said before, when you're into a movie and you're like, you know, when you're at your best mentally and you're fresh, or you're into a problem at work, or when you're in a computer, I mean, computers can really do it to you. You see these programming guys, you know, and you say, come on, it's 2 o'clock, you want to go home yet? And you say, no, you know. That's like concentration. Yeah?
Yeah, I'm a little confused about, I thought Shung, especially later when you're really into it, that discursive thought was not helpful.
It's a error. The teaching of Kamala Shila and Jerry Rinpoche is that to concentrate on a series of thoughts, an analysis is shamatha. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the when shamatha is linked with phaktum, in the sense of the direct perception of emptiness, you will not have discursive thought. That you cannot have discursive thought, because discursive thought is what? Which one of the two truths? Which
relative
one of the two truths?
Relative.
It's relative truth. Well, you cannot focus on a relative truth while you're perceiving emptiness directly. Only a Buddha can. Okay, a normal human being, any human being can't. So you can't have discursive thought. And as you get into yogic shamatha, yogic direct perception, there's a kind of perception called yogic perception, which is neither, it's not discursive. And that you won't have discursive thought going on. But definitely up to that state, you have to have. Because you have to be thinking of the reasons why something is empty, which is what we covered in the last class. For those of you who still can think about it. Yeah, you will. And Jay Rinpoche, Jetson Kapa, felt that he emphasized it because he felt that too many people in Tibet thought it wasn't the kind of meditation. And he states that several times. He states that a lot. Okay. So he says, that's one way to tap up your mind. Okay, that's a good word. The next one is to think about the benefits of...
That's another object, right?
Yeah, if you don't... let's say you want a different object than... Think about how lucky you are. He says you can meditate about the benefits of behaving correctly toward the Lama. You can meditate on the benefits of behaving correctly toward the Lama. And that's something we haven't studied yet, and we'll study it later.
Why that? Why is that good, particularly versus something else?
A lot of these, and you have to keep in mind, a lot of these are like, what's that kind of coffee with the crystals? They're like freeze-dried Toksok dip junk. They're like freeze-dried, concentrated virtue collectors. And there is no higher collective virtue than to serve your lama correctly. There is no higher way to collect goodness than to serve your lama. So just meditating on it is already, it's almost like you're creating the karma on the spot to have a good, to go back to your object and be able to have clarity towards it.
So you're creating merit by meditating on this virtuous object, and when you take a break, you're still in a virtuous object.
Well, in the first place, you were trying to concentrate on this physical image, right? And now you are concentrating on, it's a discursive thought, and you're thinking about all the reasons why it's nice to, all the good things that can come out of being, of having a proper relation with you. Because if you don't, you'll never get anywhere, period. And that's the first step in the long run. Of all the many stages that you go through, that's number one. Because if you don't have a relationship with some lama like that, then you just, nothing will ever happen. It can't. And if you mess it up, your practice will not go well.
Your lama is not a Buddha, and
he
didn't just
say... Your lama is always a Buddha. We'll prove it later. Okay. Right now you can't believe that. Right now you can't... And it doesn't matter whether he is or not. I'm talking about what your perception is, which is actually what he is.
Okay.
So that's another story. Okay.
What if you don't have a lama, or if you consider the Dalai Lama your lama, and how can you behave well to him when you never see him?
It's funny, you know, what is the structure of the Lam Rim? The Lam Rim, the first division in the Lam Rim, which has thousands of divisions, is Tuntum and Tuntum Le Toa, which means when you're in meditation and when you're out of meditation. And actually, the principal way of this Guru Yoga, right, behavior towards your Lama, is during meditation. So if you're serving him mentally, you know, if you're just meditating on the practice of serving him, this is one important way of you're doing it. So it's not, you don't have to worry about that. Somebody asked him in Arizona, if you meet your teacher once a year, is it still a relationship? He said, yeah.
But you shouldn't have stupid questions.
Excuse me?
He said, but you shouldn't have stupid questions.
I said, don't bother him. But I have a feeling that any question we ask him.
But does it have to be your root lama or just your lama? When you
the
lama,
definition of a lama is anyone who has taught you A, B, and C. On up.
A, B, and C mean the letter A, the letter B, the letter C, not any B.
Your first grade teacher should be treated as a lama. Period. In Tibetan it's called kakaka. You know, anyone who's taught you so much as...
Everybody's your mama,
well, any person who's given you the kindness of teaching you so much as in the first three letters of the alphabet when you were a little kid, you should treat that code of behavior.
That's nothing to do with the
root
mama.
No. So do the... And this is a long subject. I didn't want to get into this. It's not the subject tonight. But you have to study that. You have to study about that. It's very...
I think it's in the red book up there.
Yeah, it's in the
very
red book.
Very nicely.
But I think you have to... It's one of those things that Buddhism says that's not natural for our culture, and you have to study it. And you heard it once now. You have to actually have it proven to you that it's useful, and then you'll want to do it. So right now, just leave it like mind on light. And it's very hard to think of what that means. But I think that's where you actually try to imagine some kind of brightness. Yeah, but I hesitate to say it definitively. I'll ask Rinpoche. I don't feel comfortable with that. I remember me and Art struggling with this translation 15 years ago, and it's a difficult. It means... think brightness. Now, what that is, I think it is. There are many meditations where you imagine white light in your body and things like that. I believe that's what it refers to. But I'd like to check it, okay? He says if you still have the problem, okay? If none of the above works, Now we're talking almost like a third level of Dhimma, right? Okay. What was the first level of Dhimma? Broadly speaking.
To bring back the clarity.
Yeah, you keep your mind on that object that you started with, and you just try to regenerate your clarity. Make it more clear to yourself. Which means, try to bring your mind up back up to a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed state. It doesn't mean to try to see the Buddha's fingers a little bit better. You're working on your mind, not on the object. You're trying to uplift your state of mind as you look at the object. So you don't give up the object, but you try to tune up your mind. By the way, he says, learning the art of tuning up your mind is much more important than learning the art of what's going to come next. After bringing down your mind. The next problem, we didn't even get to it yet. Okay. It's going to be how to tune your mind down. But he says the most common problem with meditation is dullness. It's where your mind has gone sunk. It's sunk too low. And now you're trying to bring it back up. You're trying to tune up your mind and bring it back to an alert state. So the first level of concentration is where you haven't gone too low and you can just tune it up a little bit and you're back to bright. You're back to alert. Yeah. You want to turn that on?
No, kind of like the flame on the stove.
Yeah. You're just tuning it up a little bit.
Yeah.
By the way, he quotes the Buddha for this process. He says, think of yourself as a guitar string. You know? If you get too loose, you get flat. Tune it up a little bit. If you get too sharp, if you get too tight, you get sharp. These don't sound good. The Buddha said this, and he's talking about meditation. He says the process of meditation is like tuning an instrument. And it's constant tuning. You know, when you drive a car, you notice when you first drive, you keep your hands still, and then slowly the car goes this way or slowly. And then you learn to keep going like this. And meditation is just like that. It's like tuning the thing. Then it gets a little flat. You tune it up. If you go too far, it gets a little sharp. It's this constant practice of tuning it. It's like the small adjustments. When you watch somebody drive, they don't hold their arms still. They're always going like this. You know? Yeah.
Do you mean to say that the development of shamatha is like that, or that even after you've developed shamatha, it's still
we'll talk about
balancing
it.
That?
It's coming.
Well,
I'm going to talk about it. I'll talk about that question. If I don't answer it by the end of the night, ask me again. Okay. All right? Okay. Yeah.
So how do you do that? I mean, you know, I thought it meant trying to see things.
Dhimma means tightening it up.
Yeah, but how do you do
that? Which means, oh, it's like, it's hard, you know. It's like telling someone, oh, try to be fresh while you're tired. It's exactly that. You know, it's where your mind has gone down, your alertness level has gone down. And sometimes you can return to your original alertness level just by trying to, just by thinking to. And he says, if that doesn't work, then think of something that's interesting to you. It's interesting, you know, when I try to read Madhyamika, I don't know why, it always puts me to sleep. For 20 years, it's put me to sleep, you know. But if I stay up late and watch a good movie, you know, I can watch 3 or 4 in a row, you know, and the alertness level is there. I think just it's a willpower or something. So he says, if you haven't gone too far down, just tune it back up. If you drop too far down, think of something that makes you alert. You know of bad objects. I can think of some bad objects that make my mind very alert. You know, desire objects. And then my mind will go like that. I mean, but he's saying, think of some object that will return you to alertness. And he's suggesting, what's the most powerful? To be alive. I also like that one because it applies to everybody who can read this book. If you got the book and you're alive, well, you can be happy about that, right? You know, it's not like to be happy about being smart, because some of us aren't, or, you know, like that. It's just be happy that you're alive and that you can study Dharma, you know? And he says, if you don't think it's such a big deal, you have a problem. Okay. So now that was the second level of Dharma. Now I'm going to talk about the third level of Dharma. The third level, he says, stop the meditation. Get up and take some steps to stop being tired. Excuse me?
What?
No, I don't think the second one had a lot of different ones inside of it. Okay. Mm.
No, you quite a different thought.
That's still one of the second types.
There was like three parts to the second one.
Yeah. There were many ways to get off the object and use some other kind of thoughts to raise your mind back up, to uplift your thoughts again. And they included thinking about how good it is to serve a lama, thinking about how lucky it is to be alive, and some kind of brightness.
So those all were collectively G2.
Yes.
Now we're on G3.
Yep. By the way, another one he mentions is thinking about the good qualities of a Buddha. And we have to study those sometimes.
Oh, yeah, all that was part of G1, right?
Yeah, it's G1A, G1B.
Right.
You asked for it.
Right, so G1 has three parts now.
We're on G1C. Yeah. You think about it. I mean, you don't have to ask this question if you think logically. Okay, the first attempt you make to tighten your mind back up is don't give up on the object. Keep the object and tune it up a little bit. Your mind. Your alertness level. And the whole things I just talked about were all, okay, when it gets so bad that it's not enough to tune up your alertness level, and you have to think of something else to uplift your mind and get you alert again. Now, let's say it's gotten really bad. None of those things work. He says, break the meditation. Get up. Okay. And he says, I mean, these are good for Tibet. Go stand in a cold place. In a cool place. Somewhere, I mean, go get some fresh air.
What if you live in New York?
Go stand outside in the fear of getting mugged.
He says, go to some place where you can see. This word is beautiful in Tibetan. I can't think of it American English. Go see some wide open places. Go look at some wide open places. Beautiful. And in Tibet, it would mean go to the Gamo Valley, to the little mountain there, and look 20 miles off into the. I guess you could go up to the Empire State Building. Some of us say, just go out and look at the sky. You know, I mean, that's just a big, something big that gets you out of yourself. Something expansive. That was his second suggestion. This, the third one I really like, and I'm really upset that no one taught me in the monastery. Later I saw people doing it, and I realized how good it was. And it's just pacing, walking back and forth.
The third one?
Yeah.
The fourth one? Like this part of the stop meditation.
Yeah, after you've given up on the meditation, after you've stood up. And in the monastery, I started to notice that a lot of the good geshes, you know, we have to memorize for 3-4 hours. I used to sit there with a book in front of me and try to memorize, and I would always doze off. And then I noticed that they walk like pretty far, you know. And then they're down like this, you know, like Napoleon, and then and they do that for hours, you know. And it's a way to keep fresh and keep your attention on something. And it's good for studying. And I've always done that. When I'm memorizing, I go and I just find a long place to go back and forth, and it works.
To sit
and try to look and get bored and doze off, this is great. It really works nice. I'm really upset someone didn't teach me, because I have spent 6, 7, 8 years trying to do it the other way. And I did it, but I always used to fall asleep. You know, now it's great. You know, you're getting some fresh air, you're moving, your body's moving, and you can keep your alertness up.
So, Michael, you're not suggesting we do all of these, just do one of them.
Pick the one that fits your constitution. And that's true about all of these things. Use common sense. Mm-hmm. Use common sense. If you live in an apartment like this, you can't pace very well. I tried it.
It's the idea of just getting
without an object. I can understand why you want
He's just saying
to pacing for memorizing. Pacing as a way of refreshing yourself, doesn't it? Is it really pacing?
Yes, that's it. Yeah. Or he says, go wash off your face with some water. You go.
Go.
What do you call it in English? Throw some.
Splash your face.
Splash your face with some water.
General Bud Latin.
It's Falun Rinpoche, but he's quoting a lot of people, and he's mainly he's still on Kamala Shiva, I believe. He's mentioned Kamala Shiva. It's not himself.
Is splash water on face part of facing?
Nope.
It's not as you paste it. Yeah.
So you pick your, you pick the one that fits your best. Is that hot yet, Lee?
Yeah, I think it were.
That was not fishing. All right, take a break. And what are we going to do next?
We're going to agitate.
Yeah, what to do if you have the opposite problem, which is you catch your mind wandering off to, what are you going to do this afternoon? You know, what do you got to do after you get up?
Can you do two, for example, if you can do two, let
me do two.
Can
call
the other half.
Two.
Two.
Yep,
G2. What? What is the Gupa mean?
Gupa is that, what do we call it? Agitation. I don't know if that's such a good word. I guess because of the literal meaning of it, it's okay, because it means like wild man. You're good. Really, seriously. Jima was dullness, right? Two L?
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing I take a point off for on your homework, did you know it?
Yes, I've been noticing that, Michael.
By the way, if you're about to get 100 and I find any misspelling, I can't call it perfect. I'm sorry.
Why did you make that rule?
Mentally. I say this thing could be passed on through generations, you know. Laura Siegel, homework number 4, class 3, you know. And it's not spelled right. Am I going to say this is perfect?
Nah.
Ask Kyla, you got so many 99s you can collect them.
You mean the transliteration?
Any spelling.
But that's
no, transliteration, I'd like to
I don't even know what rules are.
English spelling dictionary. Okay. Hubba means, if we're still on the guitar string example, what would hubba be? It even sounds like loosen it up. Yeah. And it's exactly what it means. Hubba means loosen it up. What's the problem? The problem occurred back in number 3. You got agitated, which means that your mind went to a desirable object.
Or virtuous object.
And Shashin did what? Alertness said, hey!
The guard.
And then the troops come out and hubba. The action that you take is hubba. Loosen up.
No, then it's what you said was the opposite.
Excuse me?
Is it possible? What happens when you go agitated? Is it the same
thing
tight? Not
agitation means you're too tight.
Yes.
Yeah. So the antidote, the correction, is hubba. By the way, if I ask you what's the correction for problem number 4, you're going to say taking action. If I say what actions do you take, you say, well, it depends on what the problem is. If the problem is dullness, you tighten up. If the problem is agitation, you loosen up. And the Buddha himself taught it. He said, he called it a piwa. A piwang is an Indian lute. By the way, what was one of the antidotes? What was one of the ways to tighten up your mind? Like if you wanted to uplift your mind? He said that being down is almost like some kind of depression or discouragement. And the way to uplift it was to take some joy out of being alive and things like that. So he says, now, Gopa is sort of like being too joyful. It's like being too happy. And your mind's going on to, hey, you know, what's for dinner? Okay? He says, by the way, this happened to King Setan. And that's the reason he never perceived emptiness directly. Who is Setan? Do you know? Setan was the Buddha's father. Okay? He had the honor of being taught by his son. And he, according to this scripture, he never reached. In that life, he never saw it. Because he had this problem, as he meditated, he would think, you know, he was a little bit too up. Okay?
Well, what do you loosen up? Your concentration?
I'll say, he has it here very nice. Let me tell you.
You're like shaking it off on you.
Right. He says it's where you're tight, you're too tight on the object. And you're so tight on the object that you start to get, being too tight on the object, trying to concentrate too hard, he says that comes first. And in the next few seconds, your mind is off to another object. By trying to concentrate too hard, you create a circumstance where your mind in the next few seconds has gone off to another object.
So it's not really just discursive thought.
Then it's called almost pusidopo. Pusidopo means like... Pusidopo means... like when you get too busy at work and someone says something to you and you're like, no, you know, you know, you're like... They call it narrow-minded, but it means the mind got too squished into that. Where you're concentrating so hard that it becomes a fault.
So it's not
good concentration. It's not good alertness. It's almost where you're obsessed with something.
So this is not, we're not talking about them in this case where you have various discursive thoughts because of not paying attention or having thoughts stripped in.
No. What he's saying is that happens right after. Normally, if you're concentrating so hard then a few minutes, a few seconds later, your mind is off to another object. And it gets tired. It's a fault. Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the term discursive thought and analytical.
Well, discursive means where you're talking to yourself in your mind.
And what about the analytical meditation? What is that opposed to?
We're going to talk. Well, I think it's maybe a good thing to talk about. There's different kinds of meditation. And I was going to bring it up during the object. So don't write it down, but just be aware. Jogom means one Buddha image and you're fixed on it. Okay? And Jogom means you take a problem, a philosophical question, and you put it center stage in your mind and you investigate it in meditation. That is a kind of meditation. Yeah, and that's Jetsun Kapa's big thing. He says, don't think it's not a kind of meditation. It is. It has all the qualities of a good meditation. Chegom. Then there's Shargom. Shargom means it's kind of a review meditation, which is actually the meditation you're going to end up with at the end of this course, which is where you're trying to take your mind along a certain train of thought over and over and over until it becomes natural for you. You know, what comes after that? This comes. What comes after that? That comes. What comes after that? You take your mind. They're doing this in linguistics and child development theory now. Child should learn another language because it opens certain synapses that otherwise wouldn't get opened. And they learn that they have certain series of thoughts that they never would have gone through. It's a series of thoughts that you go through over, like a racetrack that you know very well, until it becomes natural. You see in the Olympics, these skiers, they mention that they memorize the gates, the position of the gates. They sit up there and they do a shargom. That's a shargom. You know, they think I'll take three breaths, I'll turn left, I'll go another 20 feet, I'll turn right, and they go through the course of, like, many times and memorize it.
Mental obstacle course.
It's a shargom. Yeah, that's called shargom. So really, there's three kinds. Of later. I don't want to get into it today.
Okay.
So dhamma means loosen up. Now I'm going to tell you some ways to loosen it up. The way he got into joy was how. When he was talking about.
By reflecting on himself, the circumstances.
Why did he come to joy? Why did he mention joy?
He is uplifting.
Yeah, because he tied discouragement to the state of dullness. Okay? Interesting. He tied discouragement, what was the other one?
Depression
to the state of dullness. So now he's doing the opposite. He's tying overjoy to the state of agitation. I don't know, what would you call that? Gawa means joy, but it means excessive.
Unrealistic?
No, it's like, you know, when you're giggly. Silly happens.
Hilarious.
You're almost like not quite hysterical, but you're a little too. You know, at work when you get a little bit hyper and you start making these crazy jokes, and it's really not appropriate. But you're like up, you know. You're like hyper. You know, it's almost like hyper. Hyper maybe something. A little bit too happy. Kids do it just before they start crying. You know, 10 minutes before they start screaming. So. He says, what would be the antidote for that? You see, the antidote for depression, as tied to dullness, was joy. The antidote for excessive joy, excessive giddiness, would be what? How would you bring it? Yeah, think of something sad. He gives some examples.
Death.
Yeah, his first one is death. Death. Your own coming death. That's the meditation called Chivamitapa. It's what we're doing on Friday night. It's what we'll be doing as of tomorrow night. We'll be doing it from Lam Rim Chenmo, Jetsun Kabla. The meditation on your approaching death. Okay. And that's true. So he says, that's the first way to bring your... Like at work, it's when your boss walks in. What is that report, Lane? Suddenly all your giddiness is like... Just goes boom, you know. That's the first one he mentioned. Second one he mentions is the suffering of life. The sufferings of this life. Which are three, you guys know. What are they?
Of aging.
Not that easy. Well, Keiga Naishi is four. That's another thing.
Suffering of suffering?
Yeah, the suffering of suffering, which is raw suffering. The example in the scriptures is, do you remember? A backache. Which you can meditate on.
Okay. And the suffering of change.
Suffering of change. And what was the example in Scripture? Do you remember? The taste of a good meal. Because it is necessarily connected to hunger. The second part of it is always suffering. Okay. And what's the third example? By the way, all pleasures of life are that way. So they're not pleasures according to Buddhism. Third one? Yeah, pervasive suffering, which means just to be alive in this kind of life, which was propelled by karma and your bad thoughts. The nature of your life. The nature of you. We are debating out in New Jersey the advanced text on meditation with all the monks there and the nuns there. And they're talking about how there are certain kinds of wrong meditation where you just get more and more blissed out. There's like 17 stages. And this one, you actually can get to a point where you no longer even have any desire to be happy mentally. And then you get to a higher stage where you don't even want to be neutral anymore. To be neutral in this body is not desirable. You know, even if you could reach a very high state of meditation where even you didn't even want to be happy anymore, but you just stable, totally stable. If you didn't have the extra energy to not want to be in this kind of body and life, well, what would happen? You'd just meditate, and then you'd get old and die. And there have been Buddhist people who do that. The point is to get rid of that last one also. We'll talk about it. Okay. He says if it still doesn't work, now we're getting to more drastic antidote, right? If it still doesn't work, you have to use drastic means. He says count your breath. Go to your breath. Meditate on your breath. Yeah.
Why is this a drastic meaning? Because it's useless.
Well, you've got the parallel to Drimba, and I didn't do it parallel, but now I'm going to fix it, okay? What would be the parallel first step? What would be the first step you would take?
Death.
To loosen up. No, I made a mistake. That was the second one. What would be the first one? What would be the parallel to the first? What was the first kind of Dhamma? Yeah. So just don't let go of the object, but just back off a little bit. That would be the least drastic method. Just back off from it a little bit. The word in Tibetan is troa, which is very difficult. It means, it's what light does when you turn on a candle. It means broaden, loosen up a little bit. Well, it's the way it goes like. So you're like that, and he said just.
It's like the gradation, you know, the gradation becomes soft.
He says loosen up, mentally loosen up on the object. If that doesn't work, then what? Change this up, change the object to what? Your death. Okay? If you can't bring your mind down by loosening up, think about your death. If that doesn't work, change to an external object, which is what? Your breath. Take your mind to your breath.
Can we have the sufferings in between those two?
Yeah. Suffering was another kind of object you could use as, or you could use death, or you could use the suffering of your life as the medium drastic action.
So both of those are G2A
then? Yeah. G2B, please.
No, G2A.
G2A was lighten up on the object. Loosen up on the object. But don't lose it. Nope. G2 was loosen up in general. All of these three are going to be kind of loosening up as we had three kinds of G1s. Tightening up. You alright? There were three kinds of tightening up. The first was what? Don't let go of the object. Tighten up on it. The second one was what?
Shift to another object.
Shift to another object, which, for example, benefit of serving your mama, etc. Third way of tightening up, get up, splash water on your face, whatever you want. Then, by the way, I forgot to say, after you splash water on your face, go back down. By the way, I'll mention here a very, very important instruction that I was always given in, which is in this text, and which I've seen in other texts. It's not related now, it's just a general instruction. Don't get up off your meditation seat in failure. Yeah. Wait till it's going smooth, then stop. They say, so you'll be happy to see it again. So otherwise, you look at it and you say, this thing beat me last night. You know, like I used to surf, you know. And if you got thrown down on a reef or something, you were supposed to go back out and stand up one more time, you know. Just so you left it all right. Try to go back and leave it happily. Which also means when your meditation time is just about over and it's going pretty well, then leave it. There's two characteristics then that happen. One is that you're happy about meditating. Secondly, the next meditation you have is almost like a flow from the last one. And it's true. If you meditate a lot, you'll start to notice that. If you meditate every day, then the day that you go to the office will seem to be almost like just a short break between your meditations. And not vice versa. It'll seem to flow then. And you just, when you sit down tomorrow, you're just picking up from today, where you left off. That works. It works that way. If you do it same time every day. And don't quit after this course is finished.
Well, then how do you justify stopping the meditation and getting up when you're having problems?
Oh, but then what I'm saying is then sit back down.
Oh, go back.
I forgot to mention that. That's why I'm mentioning it.
So what is the parallel on upa and loosening up under the parallel to shift to another object?
Shift to another object, either death, or your death, or the sufferings of life.
That's
your death. Yeah, you're approaching death, or the general lousiness of your existence, okay? Mm. You can't win, right? Nothing can go well here. Those things which go well will end. These classes will end. You know, our relationship will end. you know, there'll be a day when at least no longer any of these things. Pabongo Rinpoche, in his text, he had 10,000 people listening to him. And he got up and said, you know, who'll be the last person to die in this room? And in fact, now that we're reading this book, they all are dead. I mean, most of them are dead. You know, most of the people in that lecture were dead. You know? So that's the nature of our life. So that's what we're trying to avoid.
His body.
Yeah. Okay. That's all he said about that one. Okay, we'll finish now. Is everybody clear on that? So he asked, what are the parallelisms? I'll draw it just to make sure we got it. Okay. For dullness, what were you supposed to do at the most basic kind of dhimba? You were supposed to keep the object and do what? Tune up, right? Tune up alertness, something? These are all kinds of tightening up. I guess that's where Tom's getting confused, okay? These are all kinds of tightening. These three are all going to be different kinds of tightenings. Different levels of tightening, right? Hopefully, all you have to do is just be aware and tune up your alertness a little bit. If that doesn't work, what are you going to do? Shift your object to what? Yeah, uplift yourself with... The best one is, you know, I'm alive. In Dharma, okay? By the way, I mean, when you study the Lamrim more carefully, you'll realize that you're about one in a billion. You know, sentient being-wise. You're at the peak. You know, you may not think you're the CEO of General Electric, right? You're actually in a better condition. You're actually more rare. You know, you've reached a point which is infinitely more rare to reach than to be the President of the United States or Miss America or whatever. Okay. You're studying Dharma, this planet, and you understand it, and you're able to use it. So your situation, you know, karmically, is infinitely more difficult to reach this point than any of those other ones. Okay. And what was to go outside?
God's will.
Yeah, which was, okay, what did we say? I prefer pacing. Okay. Pacing, go look at, you know, go out and look at the Hudson River or something.
Stop the meditation and get up.
Yeah, so that's what I mean to go outside. In this case, in the case of tightening, it means wash your face, whatever you have to do to get yourself out of that low alert state. Okay. Then,
what?
Go back.
Important point. Okay.
Now, this is what I meant parallel. What are the parallels over here?
Loosen.
Yeah.
Alertness.
What are we going to call it? It's not really alertness at that point. It's almost obsession or something. What's a good word for that?
Vexation.
I don't like any of these words. Relax. Too tight. Well, what's the name for the problem of?
Constricted.
Wound up. Wound up.
But it's some kind of word that means too concentrated on a point.
Constricted.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. That's pretty good. Loosen up. By the way, all these kinds are kinds of loosening. I call it constriction. I like constriction. It sounds like a problem, right? It sounds like constipation. You have to loosen. These are all kinds of loosening, just as these were all kinds of tightening. Okay. Shift the object to what? What's a good one?
Death or suffering.
Death. My death.
You're not
going to
die because we asked you not to go.
If my karma will cooperate. Okay. Go to the outside. This is why I said go to the outside and not get up, because what does go to the outside mean here?
Breath.
Start counting your breath. Go back to counting your breath.
So when you're agitated, you don't ever stop in meditation, is the idea?
Yeah, it sounds like that. He doesn't say anything like... He doesn't say anything like get up or anything.
Because according to what you
say... I'm sorry, he does say, he says... Even if you do that and you're not able to get rid of your agitation, then for the time being, stop the meditation.
So then you do stop on a down note.
And he doesn't say anything else. Then he goes on to another subject. How do you count a breath? Which is one? Yeah, that's not what we normally think in the West, you know. Out is one and in is two. I mean, out is half and out is first half and in is second half.
Why is it that?
It's very important later, and we'll talk about it someday. It's the idea of bringing things into you. Okay. You never leave something by going out.
Yeah. Tightness is not on the object. The tightness is kind of a general all-over tightness.
Of your body?
Of everything that can lead to the attention of everything else, so that it can lead to this sort of ping-ponging around and being hyper.
It's true in the sense that the result of being too constricted is that your mind wanders, and that's what gross guffa is. That's what gross agitation is. It's the breeding ground for distraction. Or starting to think about, you know, what are you going to have for lunch? Or what are you going to do when you get up? That's like the most common one for me. I don't know. Because I'm always doing something.
Both of these, you should go back to meditation.
Yeah. He didn't state it, but when he says counting the breath, he's implying that you should go back.
So all of them go back to meditation.
So in the way that this mentally feels, this constriction, this agitation, how does it feel?
By the way, he says again in the text, he says, you know, I can't really, you have to have it happen to know what it's like. I think it's when you know the feeling when you're concentrating too hard on a problem. Mm-hmm. And so that it becomes obsessive, and then you lose your ability to act on it properly. You know, get fixated rather than fixed.
I might offer a personal experience. Uh-huh. When I was younger, I used to build model airplanes, and sometimes it required a great deal of steady hand to do this very fine detail, and there was no question that I wasn't concentrating on it. It was in my face, and I was so tight that I couldn't do the fine work, and I'd get very frustrated and like that. And I found if I backed off a little bit, it worked a lot better. But there was nothing else in my mind but doing this job the right way. I was in my face.
Okay. Now, something real cute, all right? Watch.
You get it all over, right?
That's it.
What?
The problem was the fourth with the last solution.
It turns into a problem.
Yeah. And we'll talk about it. Okay, just write it down. Problem number five is Dujepa.
Taking action.
Solution number eight is leave it alone. Don't take action.
Just hum and ride along.
Kenny, what was his name in the factory?
Lauper.
Kenny Lauper used to say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. What this means is, when you have taken action, you tuned it up or you loosened up, and it's going smooth, for God's sake, leave it. Okay? This is called tangyong sometimes. Tangyong means let it go. Just let it cruise. Okay?
No.
This, now we're on the final problem. The final problem of meditation is...
That's not a problem letting it cruise.
Yeah, what it says is, the final problem is doing something, taking action when you shouldn't. It's going smoothly, and you're taking action. You're trying to tighten it up or loosen it up when it's already just where it should be.
Or knowing when to stop applying the antidote when it's worked.
Knowing when to just let it cruise. Let it fly. You took all the corrections you needed to take. Let it fly for a while. It's like when you're driving, there are times when you just... A good driver's going like that all the time he drives. And then sometimes he's on a straight road, he's got a good car, the alignment is nice, and you just shouldn't be doing anything. You shouldn't be moving. Okay. This is when your meditation is gliding nice. Just let it go. Don't mess around with it. So the problem is taking action. The correction is don't take action. Leave it alone. Mm-hmm. Don't take action. You just flipped around the last two, okay? Is that all right? Got it? The classical writers at this point always say the same thing. It's very interesting. They say there were these early scholars, these early masters, who said, Sorab Gomrab. Sorab Gomrab means perfect cruising is perfect meditation. Perfect loosening is perfect meditation. There was a saying in ancient Tibet, Sorab Gomrab. And Jay Rinpoche gets indignant about it, which he did all the time. You know, he's trying to correct people. He says, then what happened was that word spread around Tibet, and people were always going around saying, hey, just sit down and don't think about anything. You know, just let your mind cruise. Watch your thoughts. Label your thoughts. You know, just watch them go. You know, this is true meditation. You know, just leave it alone. Let your mind do whatever it wants.
Was that the famous Tibetan log meditation where you just sit on the bank of the river and watch your thoughts come
out? I haven't heard that one. By the way, there is a meditation on your mind. There is a meditation on the nature of your mind, and that's Mahamudra. And we won't go into that. There is such a meditation. But that's different from... That's a meditation in which you seek to see the emptiness of your mind. But just watching your mind, watch the thoughts go fly. Don't try to control them. Just let them go by. Just loosen up and be natural. He says, mistake. That's not meditation. You know. And it's interesting. And there are times when it seems to be useful. I mean, it's not unuseful completely. You can track your own tendencies. But what he's saying is, in Tibet, it happened that people who had already reached this high stage, they had already reached through the first four columns, that some master who had already reached this fifth stage said, the best meditation is cruising. And somebody who hadn't reached the first stage heard it and said, hey, the best meditation is cruising. Everybody cruise, you know. Don't do anything. And that's exactly what it says in the Tibetan. It says, unfortunately, people who hadn't reached even the first problem thought, well, it's time for me to stop doing anything. You know, they jumped to the fifth, the eighth solution before they had the first problem. You see?
So you should experience the others before.
You will. and that's the purpose of studying meditation. You know, you would think that in a meditation course we should just flop down and meditate.
Because I've heard in some meditations, like insight meditations, where you sit there and just see what comes up.
There are countless meditations that people are teaching nowadays. I mean, someone gave me this magazine, you know. You know, you can go through the back of one of these Dharma magazines and see all sorts of stuff. I can't vouch for the usefulness or non-usefulness. It's not classical Buddhism. It hasn't been taught in the original text that I'm aware of, and I've read many.
Like the possible meditation?
I don't know what they do. But if it's sitting down and just...
Watching your breath.
Watching your breath has a function of dysfunction, bringing your mind down after it's too excited, or preparing your mind for a virtuous object. But anin by itself is not a virtuous object. So it's very useful. It's taught in the Abhidhamma Kosha. It comes from the Abhidhamma Kosha. Vipassana meditation came from Burma. So from Goenka Ji, and he studied Abhidhamma in Burma, and it's good. But its function is a preliminary to deeper meditation, and Goenka teaches it that way.
So really, all the meditations we're learning, well, we've just gone through the five problems, before that even, is meditation on the breath.
Yeah, because then you're going to shift to the real object.
To an object.
Breath is neutral. Breath, if you drive a car, breath is to get the car into neutral. Like if you ever drove a car, you drive out, you're back out of your garage, and you jam it into forward.
Yeah.
You have to stop first, put it in neutral, and then put it in forward. And that's the function.
So it's the idea then to replace the discursive thoughts with one point of concentration on your breath to displace the discursive thoughts?
No, you could. Your object of meditation could be discursive thoughts. Going through the outline of the long rim is discursive thinking.
No, I mean just random thoughts coming into your head.
Then distinguish between random and discursive.
Okay, random thoughts.
Discursive means this is this, this is that, this is that, this comes
back. Yeah, random.
That's okay. Random means, what am I going to do for breakfast? Mini pancakes, mini mug, nice and orange. Then you should bring it back to the breath.
So then, is that the object of the breath meditation, to replace those random thoughts?
Yeah, bring you back down to neutral, and then shift it back. You're just shifting the object off, and then back to that. You can have one-pointed mind, ting yin zin, on a train of thought, on a path that you're trying to burn into your mind. That's gone.
And then is the idea that it's more effective to start trying to have the breath as an object, or trying to pick an object first?
These are two different breath meditations. This one's when you're already in meditation and you run into a serious problem.
That's what I'm asking. Which is more effective to start with? To which way should you begin? Begin with breath and then graduate to picking an object and working on it? Or pick an object and then when that doesn't work, go to breath?
There's two kind of breath meditations. The one taught in the Abhidhamma Kosha by Vasubandhu, which I can show you, which I translated, is to prepare yourself for meditation. It's before you start all this stuff. It's to get your mind out of your daily office mind or out of your sleep mind and get it prepared to put it onto a virtuous object. And this kind of breathing meditation, which is also counting your breath, is a drastic action to take when your mind is wandering too much. And it's not desirable. If you don't have to do it, that's better. Because what it means is pretty much, it's the equivalent of getting up and throwing water on your face.
So from understanding, you're saying you have to do both at different times?
They're two different things.
But you're doing the same mechanics.
The same mechanics,
Different
counting mechanics. Your breath for two different purposes. But I've never seen, and I wouldn't logically think, that it would be virtuous over a long period of time to focus your mind on your breath for the purpose of focusing your mind on your breath. Because your breath is impermanent and it's going to stop someday. It's not a virtuous object per se. Better to focus it on emptiness. Better to focus it on your death, the virtues of the Buddha, the Buddha's body. Your own breath is not a virtuous object. It won't have any lasting effect on your consciousness. It's good, and you should. It's very, very wonderful. You should get to where you can count to 10, or even Pabonga says 21, perfectly, and then shift it to something meaningful. And it's a good thermometer of your mental state, whether you can get to 10 or not. If you can't get to 10, maybe it's not going to work too well to shift to another object. Okay.
Homework 6,
right? Next week, what? Next week. By the way,
we have 9 states.
What are the stages that you go through if you're successful in like the first antidote? What point do you reach? There's no class on
Monday.
See if Monday is marked on that calendar behind you. Monday. Yeah, Monday no class. Okay? Oh. I'll come on Monday. Next class on a week from today. That might give me enough time to translate that. Okay.
So you're in trouble once Friday class starts. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So no class on Monday. Okay?
And what's about the 15 minutes of the meditation that you're doing?
You are doing.
I mean, you have preliminaries and counting to 10, and
then is that a little more than 15 minutes? Well, frankly, it's going to take you more than 15 minutes. By the way, I really urge you to do it at the same time every day. I don't know. Personally, I don't think 1 a.m. would be good for me. Maybe your life is different.
Uh-huh.
Generally, morning is preferred, but some people just start morning people and they can't get quiet till evening. That's okay. I don't say it's wrong, but I say you can do it in the morning.
Sasi Bhagi Jushin Etosham Viravin Shinyam Dekyam Padhi Sange Shindu Mitter Uwahi Jogunanda Shiva class 6.